Hello, Doug Brown joining Brendan Stone today on Unusual Sources on CFMU McMaster Radio 93.3 FM. Well, you know, the last few weeks we've been covering the expedition, the Freedom Flotilla, attempting to take aid to Gaza, which has been under this 8-year blockade, facing horrible conditions, but people around the world and in Canada have been making efforts peacefully to break the blockade. And so there was another flotilla, the third one, and there were two Canadians on it, Bob Lovelace and Kevin Nisch. And we talked to Bob just a few weeks ago, just before he went over to join the flotilla, and we've got Bob on the line. He's back in Canada. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Well, Bob, it's good to talk to you. Quite frankly, I think most of us were very worried about what you might face with the seizure and imprisonment and treatment from the Israeli military.
Well, compared to what people in Gaza face every day, it wasn't very much. I think for ordinary citizens in Canada, though, it may have been a bit over the top. The Israelis had announced shortly after taking the boat that it was without incident, but I can tell you that, you know, the incident that occurred was violent and intimidating, and it was certainly illegal because we were in international waters, heading to a territory that should have a free port.
Right, and maybe we could just back up a bit and go back to, you know, you were on our show a couple of weeks ago, and then you headed over to join the flotilla. Could you tell us about, you know, how you got over there, where you joined the flotilla, and then how things went up until the time of the seizure?
Sure. I flew over on the 15th of June first to Athens, and then over to Rome and to Palermo, where I linked up with the Marianne, which had started off in Gutenberg, Sweden, and made a number of stops along the way in European ports. When I joined in Palermo, my role was to be a participant, but also be the nonviolence trainer as we were in the final stages of gathering our last participants to go on the Marianne. So, and it was at that point that we had most of our participants, but we were expecting to take on an Al Jazeera team in just outside of a port in Greece. It ended up, though, that one of our boats was sabotaged, and the member of the Knesset, Palestinian member of Knesset, Basil Gaddis, was also, he was transferred to our boat, and just after we left Messina and along the coast of Crete, as well as Dr. Mizuki, who was the ex-president of Tunisia. He was the president who first democratically elected president, and after a second election, when he lost, he simply, you know, stepped down, and that confirmed for Tunisia a real democratic move.
So you were with very distinguished company on the boat, and Kevin Nisch, another Canadian, was on the boat as well, I understand.
Yes, Kevin was the engineer. He had started off in Gutenberg, Sweden, and he shepherded the boat's mechanics and engine all the way through. not only Kevin. Kevin was really an important part of the Marianne, but also Ahab Latoyev and also Christiane Martel, who's a very prominent labor leader, were on other boats.
Okay, so
so there were four Canadians altogether.
So yeah, Canada was well represented by four very distinguished participants, and the Marianne then proceeded toward Gaza. What was the first evidence that the Israeli military was going to do something?
Well, all along, we noted that we had shadows, really even from the time we left Palermo. We went through a very stormy night, but still there was a ship on our radar that kept pace with us at a fair distance. And so this was true throughout the Mediterranean. We were always shadowed by something. And we decided on the night of the 28th that the captain and I and a few other people, Kevin, met on the bridge, and we talked about sort of a plan of action, because we were within within about 10 hours of Gaza. And so we decided to pull into a major shipping lane just outside of Egyptian waters, near the mouth of the Suez Canal, where the Suez Canal connects with the Mediterranean. And we felt that that was a fairly safe place to be. But during the night, four cruiser-class battleships pulled up, and we received a radio message that the Israelis were going to close in on us, and they were going to send a boat to negotiate. Well, about a half an hour later, and this was about 2 o'clock in the morning, about a half an hour later, this Zodiac with painted white with Coast Guard written on the side pulled alongside, and negotiator, so-called negotiator, said, well, you know, there is no blockade. There is no blockade, but if you follow us to Ashdod, we will make sure that all of your passengers get to Gaza. Well, our captain said, of course not. You know, our main delivery is the boat to the Gaza fishermen. We also have some solar panels on board, which are going to a hospital, and we're in international waters, and we're a Swedish flagged ship. We have every right to travel as we choose. We have no contraband on board, so back off and leave us alone. Well, the negotiator said, well, I'm going to give you, you know, some time to think about it, because we're going to board you if you don't comply. That's not much negotiation. I've been in better negotiations before that. But what happened next was he pulled off, and really within about 15 minutes he was back, and on the stern side of the boat, both starboard and port, we were boarded by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. And they came on. There were bright lights shining in our face. Our nonviolence planning had put journalists and a member of the ex-president of Tunisia in a safe spot where they wouldn't necessarily come in contact with the IDF. There were three women, a Russian journalist and a writer from Sweden, as well as the Spanish member of the European Parliament, was also with us, Anna, and they sat in front of the galley door. They were removed fairly quickly. but two Swedish sailors, Gustav and Charlie, and I were sitting near the bridge door. We wanted to block the bridge door so that the boarders couldn't get into the bridge and control the ship. So we sat there quietly, and we were attacked. First of all, Charlie was tasered and knocked to the floor. Gustav was sitting on my lap, and I was sitting on the bare stairs to the bridge. But Gustav was tasered after that, and when I let him slide to the deck, they came after me and tasered me. At that point, we were drugged to the back of the boat, cuffed. And a really interesting scene, and I've relayed this a couple of times. There were two women soldiers on the Zodiac who still could not make the jump from the Zodiac to the Mary Ann, and their fear in their eyes was just incredible. And the Israeli commander was shouting at them. He was humiliating them and swearing at them. And Charlie, who had just been tasered, pretty brutally drug across the deck to the aft of the boat, you know, was saying to the commander, you know, would you stop it? Look at the fear in their eyes. Leave them alone. You know, this is the kind of humanitarians that I think represented the people on the boat is that, you know, still able to distinguish between one human and another. Pretty neat stuff, I think. I learned a lot on that voyage.
Wow, that really, really is incredible. Now, you know, the teasering, there was a clip I initially saw on the web. I think it was the Freedom Flotilla website. And then I just, by accident, was watching APTN Nightly News, and they had the clip and the story from Maori TV.
That's right.
So, you know, there was media coverage in New Zealand and other places, but the thing that just stunned me was there still has not been one word in the CBC or in all the corporate media outlets. I've been searching every day to see if I've missed it. No, there's an intentional blackout of this whole event in the Canadian media. So I find that really incredible. The only coverage I've seen is Rabble and ourselves and a few other community, you know, the alternative media is there, but the big corporate outlets seem to have blacked out the story.
Yeah, it's not that the story is you know, just a small story. The fact is that the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement is really gaining steam, and the flotilla movement has had this tremendous effect on educating people as to the suffering that the blockade of Gaza and the settlements in the West Bank are having on the people of Palestine. People are beginning to understand much better the situation. So you're absolutely right. The corporate media is beginning to make a real effort to downplay and to provide as little context as possible to the current events that are happening in Gaza and the rest of Palestine.
You know, I could imagine if the Mary Ann had been boarded and imprisoned, mistreated and imprisoned Canadians. It was any other country, you know, let's say it was Iran or Russia, you know, I'm sure there would be tremendous coverage. But to go to, you know, a state where you can't even mention that this happened.
Well, if this had been Somali pirates, you would have got a story in the mainstream news.
Right.
If this had been, a country that, you know, outside of the sort of favor of Canada, it would have been absolute, you know, front page for a week if Canadians had been involved.
Right, and I think it really is just such clear evidence that, you know, of the horrible bias by the corporate media in covering the everything that's happening in Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, I think that you know it's interesting. It, you know, most of us who grew up on the CBC, we really prized it as a voice of the people of Canada and a voice of the personality of Canada, but it certainly isn't that anymore. Frankly, I listen as little as possible to the CBC anymore, because it simply is music and reruns.
Right. Just another aspect of this seizure of the Mary Ann. Where is the Mary Ann right now?
Mary Ann is in Ashdod, in Israel. Israel has maintained a seizure of all of the they control all of the ships that have been seized. There are some legal cases where the flotilla movement is trying to get ships released. Now, I know that with the Mary Ann, Sweden, because this ship was flagged in Sweden, because its home port is Gothenburg, that Sweden is going to put a fair amount of pressure on Israel to let it go. You know, this is the ironic part of this, is that none of us wanted to go to Israel. We were taken there by force. We were not apprehended in any legal way, but we were boarded, really in a situation of piracy, and taken to a country that we had no intention of going to. Because of that, that's why they have to deport us as quickly as possible, is because we've committed no crime. They know that by taking ourselves and our ship and, you know, my tablet and my camera and my phone were stolen, by the Israeli, intelligence officers. But having committed no crime, they really have no defense for that.
Right. So your personal items were taken by the Israeli military, and also, I guess, the aid items that, you know, you were taking, the solar panels and other things to Gaza.
Yes.
Yeah. I noticed that the Swedish foreign minister did speak up and objected and pointed out correctly that Israel has no right to do this. It's a boat in a Swedish registered boat in international waters. There's absolutely no basis for Israel to have done this. It really amounts to a hijacking or piracy.
No, you know, I mean, if Iran had detained an Israeli ship, this would be a declaration of war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so really an outrageous action on their part, but I find just as outrageous the Canadian media reaction of intentionally suppressing this event. I think it reflects very badly on the corporate media here.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Alice Walker has pointed out some really interesting things about, she's called the flotilla our generation's freedom riders. And she's drawn some really interesting parallels. One of the things she points out is that the freedom riders of the 60s who traveled south on the bus, on integrated buses, to sit at integrated, to integrate lunch counters and to demonstrate that the races could work and think together. You know, they were called provocative, and that's what the flotilla is called. It's called provocative. That the people met with violence, and the mainstream press said, you know, they're bringing it on themselves. And so direct action is not going to get the kind of media, because the media is run by corporations that support a government that's clearly at odds with the conscience of the people of Canada right now.
Right. And how about the government of Canada? Now, did they do anything to help you and Kevin?
A member of the consulate came out to Devon Prison and interviewed both of us. Basically, she needed to fill out her paperwork, which was a questionnaire which said, are you being fed? Do you have access to water? Do you have access to medical care if you ask for it? And, you know, it's six pages of sort of questions like that she needed to fill out for her own paperwork. And then when I said, I've heard that the Minister of Foreign Affairs has said that he will offer no help to Kevin or I. She said, well, that's a political problem, and I don't get involved in political issues.
Oh, my. Wow. I wasn't aware the foreign minister had said that. That's really an outrage.
You know, when the prime minister says that he would die for Israel, you know, it's not extraordinary for the Minister of Foreign Affairs to say that anyone who is involved in challenging Israeli policy. And, you know, we've got to remember, though, that in this country today, it's against the law. It's a criminal offense to criticize Israel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a strange development. Okay, well, you know, now that you're back, and I hope you didn't, I hope you're over your injuries. That must have been horrifying. You were tasered a number of times, I understand.
I was tasered, several times. And, I was responsible for the nonviolence training, and I'm really happy to say that all in all, no one was seriously injured. I think that we'll all, you know, have memories of the situation, but we worked through a lot of the kind of preparation for that. And those who assaulted us weren't injured either. And, you know, that's the credit to the people who were on board and, you know, their adherence to the principles of nonviolence. So I was really happy with that. That it was a great crew, real humanitarians. It was, you know, to rub shoulders with each and every one of the crew of the boat and the participants that were, you know, the activists who were there was just a great experience. So I think that makes up for any sort of insult or injury.
Yes, and well, I'll tell you, Bob. Speaking for myself and most people I know, are very proud of you and Kevin, for your courageous action and everything from how you conducted yourself to the long term commitments you've made to the cause. So
thank you. I have the greatest admiration for Kevin. You know, Kevin has worked as a human shield in Gaza. He was on the Mavi Marmara when it was attacked, and eventually, you know, 10 people succumbed to died. 9 people were assassinated on the boat, and one died a couple of years from injuries. Yeah, he's faced that, and that's Kevin Nisch. He's a Canadian hero.
Yes, well, you both are in my book. Maybe it's too early to ask this, but what's ahead for the Canadian boat to Gaza and for the Freedom Flotilla?
As long as there's a blockade, there will be a flotilla. As long as there's a blockade and a diminishment of rights for people in Gaza, there'll be activists who participate. And it's not just Gaza. You know, Gaza is a front line, but there's front lines all over the world. And Canadians have always responded. That's one of the great things about Canadian history is that there's always been Canadians who responded and became activists on the front line to decolonize and to fight for human rights. So I expect that it'll continue until Gaza has a restored economy and an open port and becomes part of the world again.
Okay, well, again, Bob, thanks so much for joining us today and for all the work that you've done on this and other good causes.
Great. Thank you very much for the interview.
Okay, and that was Bob Lovelace. He's a professor at Queen's University in Kingston, and he's former chief of the Algonquin Ardoc Nation. And so we spoke to him on the phone from his office in Kingston.